a lot of hate going on. You pop a cherry with an orgy and it's all good.
Really, really talented, handsome young man.
Don't walk in here with a giant banana and think everything's going to be peaches.
Alright, well, in the words of former podcast host Adam Berry, hello and welcome. This is the Alligator Sports Podcast. We're here with the new crew, all back from our various summer activities, ready to bring you some hard-hitting news about Florida Football Media Day.
Yeah, this is the Media Day edition.
Alright, so if I haven't said that already, this is Greg Luca. I'm joined by Tyler Jett.
Hi, how are y'all doing? Good to be back.
Tom Green.
Likewise, great to be back from the West Coast.
And Matt Watts, our producer today.
Straight cash, homie. Straight cash.
All right.
This is a, in memory of Randy Moss.
Indeed.
Apparently.
Indeed.
One clap. No, all in unison. One clap. There we go. All
right. So we are here fresh off of Florida Football Media Day, where we got a chance to talk to a lot of the major players from many of the different position groups. Got to talk to Muschamp, got to talk to Brantley. So we're going to go position by position, give you a little bit of what we learned today, which we'll admit right off the bat is very little. But we will give you a little bit of analysis. We'll give you some what little hard news we have, kind of set you up for the season, give you a little bit of the position battles, preview some things like that. And then we're going to talk a little bit about Janoris Jenkins, some of the arrest troubles, some things with guys like Matt Elam and Dominic Easley, Sharif Floyd, people who need to step up. A lot on the quarterbacks. We'll get right into that. And
we'll wrap it up with our Gator guarantees.
Yes, of course. Yeah. Wrap it up with the old-fashioned Gator guarantees.
Yeah. I will say, I think Greg's on a short a little bit. I think we knew some stuff.
I think he meant that practice are closed and we can only take what we're being told
far. You heard us whine a lot in the spring about how spring practices were closed and everybody kind of just gave us the old rhetoric. Today was slightly better than that, but there's just not a lot of information to go on yet because not much has changed since we talked in the spring. They've done their private workouts, but they haven't been together as a team. They haven't had a lot of contact with Muschamp, so there's a lot of things still to be determined and things for us to learn later on in the process.
Yeah, it's a lot of us pontificating on how we think the season's going to go, but I think it's a worthwhile podcast.
Yeah, right. No, that's still interesting. I mean, I don't want anybody to turn it off.
Yeah,
after
keep
all.
Listening.
don't
stop yet.
Don't give up on us.
Keep listening. Yeah. Keep listening. Thank you. Also, what is the Alligator Sports Podcast? Do you have, like, a feedback? What's the email?
Yes.
In case people stop listening
any
at some
feedback,
point.
Send it to podcast@alligator.org. I mean, if you don't like us, that's fine, but, I mean, tell us ways to get better, too.
Yeah, if you're not getting better, you're getting worse. All right, every day. We just want to go out there and get better every day, just like
right.
John Brantley.
Take
yeah.
it one podcast at a time.
We are stealing our mantra from John Brantley. Every day, we're just about getting better, man. Just every day. It doesn't matter if we're 88th or first, man.
It's
we just got to get better.
It's the only way to live. All right, well, today was media day. We had a chance to talk to Muschamp and all the players, see how everything's been going in the off season, catch up with everybody, talk about a little bit of individual workouts. I guess we'll go through them all position by position, but we'll start with Brantley. Let's go, Tyler. What was your reaction to anything he said and just what you expect for him this year?
Well, that's a lot to start off with. I can't tell you exactly what he's going to do this year, but I'll say he had a press conference today, and honestly, there wasn't anything new. I think we all kind of know what to expect. It's a lot of, like, the storylines from spring being recycled. It's a lot of, you know, this being a new year, new offense going to fit you better, working with Charlie Weiss, who's a quarterback guru, apparently. Did anyone else notice anything that was...
No, you're right about that, about it's just being a, you know, the same cycle over and over again because they ended the press conference with, you know, one question left.
no
one had anything new to ask him.
It wasn't great moments in sports journalism history hanging out with John Brantley today. I will say that.
Yeah, it's no shocker that he said he's adjusting well to the offense, and it's no shocker that he likes Charlie Weiss and that he has a good relationship with his receivers.
And
it's
a newfound
confidence. Yeah, it's all really predictable things that we probably could have seen coming.
I guess one good thing, he kind of dodged around this, but people kind of touched on, is the fact that they're not going to be the hunted this year. Even last year when they had so many question marks coming into the year, they were still like number four preseason. And they're going to tell you that that doesn't mean anything. They will always say that. Muschamp will say that. Everyone will say, we don't care about the rankings. It's got to play a factor. Like, there's no way you just ignore it. Like, there's no way you can say it doesn't exist. So I think the fact that they're farther back this year, still 23, is still surprisingly high for a team that really was awful last year.
Yeah.
Right, they're never going to say that type of stuff in the media and in public. But the rankings and the preseason, all media or all coaches team and the media teams for all SEC, you know, no Gators on there. So it's got to be a little bit of a motivating factor for them.
Yeah, even though they're in the top 25, you know, there's still 5-6 SEC teams ahead of them. So that, like you said, they're got to be motivated by the fact that there are people within their own division and conference ahead of them, and they want to get back on top.
at the same time, to a certain extent, they must have already known that they were going to be ranked low. They shouldn't. It's not like it's like, whoa, we're 23. This is a shock. Now we're going to try harder or whatever. It's just, I feel like they must have seen this sort of thing coming.
Right. I would say the players on the team that have a good sense of self-awareness probably would be surprised. Now, there's certain players on the team I don't think have a great sense of self-awareness, and we'll probably get to that in a minute. But, yeah, I mean, I got to say, I think 23, it doesn't, like, it does, like they say, it honestly does not matter. Florida was ranked 4 last year. I don't know where they ended, but they were on the cusp of being a top 25 team, if they were one. So, like, I mean, honestly, it doesn't matter. However, I do think it's going to, I think it could motivate them. And just a lot of other, they have a lot of, this could be a season of motivation. There's a lot of reasons to be motivated this year.
Right, the season of unknowns is a lot of different things. It's one of the first years in the last 15 that Florida hasn't been ranked in the top 10 preseason. And that's, you know, for the fans, for the team, for everybody, that's something they're going to get used to.
So you've gone from the seasons of the weird to the season of the unknown?
Yeah, it is kind of the, I guess it is kind of the unknown. But I guess get back to what Greg said originally. What do you guys think to expect out of John Brantley this year? It's a tough to put a number on it because it's going to be a different offense, obviously. But, I mean, realistically, what are you looking at?
I mean, like you said, there's no idea. With closed practices, all we've got to look at is an abysmal performance in the spring game. And, you know, you've got a whole new offense coming in. But Charlie Weiss has his success and his history of quarterbacks. I got to think it's going to be a better year than last year. But it's not going to be what most Florida fans are expecting. I'll say that.
I don't think he's a starter by the end of the season.
Really?
Really?
Bold prediction.
Okay, wow. Elaborate.
I just think he's going to struggle. I mean, what has he shown us that makes us think that he can be that successful?
No, I think you're definitely right on that. I mean, he supposedly has the tools. They've been kept in lock and key in the shed for a very long time. Last year, I think we kind of touched on the confidence thing. There's no way he can't say that his confidence was shot by about week 6, week 7, by the time the Mississippi State game came around. I mean, that was the game where he caught his own pass in the backfield and lost 20 yards. I think you remember that.
And that was his best play of the season.
The most athletic play of the season. You get to the point where, like, the FSU game, where he comes in only as a third down specialist, first pass is an interception. Later in the game, there's a timeout because you can't, like, get the playoff in time. On the sidelines, on TV, everyone can see it. Meyer's chewing him out. Like, as mad as I had seen Meyer on the sidelines the whole season was at Brantley. I know Meyer said one thing before the Capital One Bowl or the Outback Bowl. Sorry, they're all kind of the same to me. During the week leading up to that, someone asked Urban something along those lines about how you feel like John Brantley handled the scrutiny and all that. He basically didn't defend John, which is something that they had done the whole year, was defend John. He basically said, if you're going to be the quarterback of Florida, you've got to have thick skin. You've got to be able to handle that. And so it was a little bit of a jab at John, and I think there's no way you can't say he wasn't unraveling from a confidence standpoint by the end of the year. And I think you go into this year, and it's sort of like everyone's new. You kind of have a fresh start, and I think it's the best thing for him.
Right. I feel like for him to have a good year, the Gators are going to have to get off to a good start because they've got a brutal October. If they're not, you know, 4-0 going into October, why not make a move? Why not see what somebody else has behind Brantley on the roster? You know what I mean? There's
especially with so many young quarterbacks behind him there.
But they're not. I don't think. Who do you think's? I guess Tyler Murphy might be the only one that's ready. It's not like, I think we like to look at it from the, like, just the recruiting perspective, and we're like, you know, Jeff Driscoll, he's awesome on film, and like everyone's super high on him, and Jacoby Brissett's obviously a big name guy, but there is a lot more that goes into becoming a successful quarterback in the SEC than just being fast or just being able to throw the ball deep. It's, I mean, it's a difficult thing, and they haven't had that much time to adjust to that. It's kind of similar, actually, if you think about it, to the NFL right now with the lockout, and they've only got about a month before the season starts or what have you. It's kind of similar to that. Everyone right now in the NFL is talking about how difficult it is to prepare their team. That's what it's like in college football every year. That's what those quarterbacks are dealing with.
Yeah, Brantley has to make a lot of adjustments, obviously. All the quarterbacks, everybody on the team has to make some adjustments with the new coaching staff. Tom's obviously not too confident in John Brantley. I know you guys aren't too sure about it. The fans seem to hate him. But Muschamp didn't ever seem to really doubt it, at least today when we talked to him. He seemed to say right off the bat that Brantley was the guy, almost like it was for granted, and he was surprised people were asking him about it. Like, there was no question it could ever be that way. What he did want to look at was some of the guys behind Brantley. He wants to really define roles there. So let's talk a little bit about those guys. We'll start with Tyler Murphy, who seems to be the number two right now. What do you guys think about him? Do you think he has a chance to start this season at some point?
The only real experience we have with Tyler Murphy, because there hasn't been a practice open since he's arrived on campus, and he didn't play at all last year. He was basically clipboard holder. One player on the team made a joke one time when we were, I think, I can't remember where, I think I was on the basketball courts actually with a player, and they had made the joke that Tyler Murphy's going to be a lifetime clipboard holder. He's okay with that. And then he went out in the spring and actually played really well. I don't remember what his numbers were. I don't know if we can pull that up somehow, but he actually really, he impressed me. He's got some mobility, and with the offensive line being a weak point, I think the fact that, you know, Murphy can move around a little bit more than Brantley can be a factor. And he put up some good numbers in the spring game, like I said. After the game, Robert Clark said, I feel like right now Tyler Murphy's the best. I like him the best out of anybody. So I think there might be, I think he's done a decent job of giving him a shot to possibly get some playing time this year if Brantley folds. I feel like he could be the first candidate off the bench more so than Driscoll and more so than Brissett, in my opinion.
I agree with that. Your boy Blaine Gabbert recently, Jaguars draft pick.
Real quick aside, I'm a big Missouri fan. Brad Smith is my Jesus. He's my Tim Tebow.
Well, yeah, Blaine Gabbert said being a backup quarterback is the easiest job in the world because everybody thinks you're better than the starter. And I think that's a big thing that's going on here with Florida is everybody wants to just, you know, get away from John Brantley. They don't have any faith in him, and they just want to look to see what else is option, what other options are sitting there behind him. And, you know, they just want, it's like recruiting. It's the feeling of hope that there's somebody else behind John Brantley that could take the Gators and, you know, give them the wins that all the fans crave.
Yeah, what Tyler was talking about, Tyler Murphy in the spring game, 7 of 11 for 68 yards, and he got a touchdown while Brantley was just 4 of 14, only 45 yards. And then obviously Brantley's not the most mobile guy. Murphy showed he's better than him in that aspect. So I think a lot of people, if you had to base it just off the spring game, would obviously say Murphy's more able right now. But of course, there's a lot more factors than that that go into it.
John Brantley could be the second coming of Danny Werfel, but we'll have no idea until September 3rd because practices are going to be closed.
Yeah, I'm not too sure how much confidence Muschamp has in Tyler Murphy as a backup, because he went out and said straightforward, you know, Tyler Murphy's number two on the depth chart right now. Then he was like, "But we need to find separation there and find out who our backup really is."
Well, yeah, I think that's the fact with every position aside from quarterback. I want to say this about Muschamp, though, is that I think he's done a really good job of making sure everyone knows Brantley's his guy. He's gone out of his way to be assertive about that, and I think it was calculated that he did it right after the spring game, like right then, at that press conference immediately after the spring game, in which Brantley did terrible, 4 for 14, and right then he said, "I've loved everything he's done for us, for this team." And I think it's, and he's done it since then. Every time he's had a chance, he's talked about how proud he is of John Brantley.
I think he's trying
to give Brantley more confidence, right, and saying that to the public and saying he's my guy. Whereas at the very beginning when he first came here, he said no positions are defined. Now there is a position defined, and it came as a result of John Brantley actually doing bad on the field. So I think it's a confidence game thing.
Definitely. Like you said, Urban was criticizing his confidence level and his ability to have thick skin last year. That's the same type of deal. I think if he didn't come out and say that Brantley was his guy after, you know, that bad performance in the spring game, then everybody like ourselves would be picking it apart, you know, saying what else is the other options. He had to kind of had to do that, like you said, to give Brantley that confidence that he needs to be a decent player.
Yeah, right now I don't think there's any question heading into the season that Brantley is one and Murphy's two. Then also, you know, you want to define all four roles, so let's talk a little bit about Brissett versus Driscoll. Tom, I guess you could start. You covered him a little bit in recruiting. Obviously, we didn't get to talk to either guy today, but just what do you know about them? What do you expect from that? And is there anything anybody's heard about that competition?
Well, I actually saw Driscoll play twice. Once his final game at Lakeland, and then Tyler and I saw him at the Under Armour game.
Which is to say that Tom saw him play in one game, and you saw him play in one circus, the latter being the circus.
Yeah, Team Click Clack, and what's the other one?
Yeah, was Driscoll on Team Click Clack, or was he on Team Micro G? I can't remember. He was on Team Click Clack, okay. Wonder if he saw his Team Click Clack jersey hanging up somewhere.
It was Team Vapor Carbon at Nike's The Opening. So
really? What were the team? What was it?
Vapor Carbon?
What was Nike's The Opening?
It was the showcase thing they had out in Beaverton, Oregon. They flew a bunch of high school players out there, recruits, and put them through a combine type of deal, a 7-on-7 tournament. Had some Florida guys out there. Mike Davis, running back commit for 2012, was there. A few other guys.
Yeah. Okay, so what? I'm sorry, it was Team Vapor?
Team Vapor Carbon.
Vapor Carbon.
I believe that's a new Nike shoe.
Okay,
so,
that's
yeah.
one team. It's not Team Vapor and Keep Carbon. It's Team
Vapor.
Vapor
Carbon. Yeah.
What was the other team? Do you know?
There was multiple teams. I believe it was
really?
Like yeah, it was like an eight round or eight team tournament. Something
what's
like that.
What's Team Vapor Carbon? What is Vapor Carbon?
I think it's a new shoe. I think it's a
shoe?
Nike shoe. Yeah.
It's like they got chemistry class going on right now.
See, listeners, this is a key point. You need to understand that we're talking about these quarterbacks. We're basing it on games that are in spring and don't matter. Practices we haven't seen
and high
school. The performances of Team Vapor Carbon. So, I mean, take it with a grain of salt.
Can we get Team Vapor Carbon jerseys on East Bay or eBay? Either one will do for me. I wish I'll get those. We'll wear them to games and stuff.
But yeah, what little we do know, Tom, do you have anything on either guy?
I liked what I saw at Driscoll. He's very talented, both with his arm and his legs. He made some ridiculous throws when I saw him in high school. The thing. I know he struggled during spring practice. I'm not sure how well he's adjusted since then. Obviously, we haven't been able to see any practices or anything.
Did he struggle during? Did they say that he was struggling during spring practice?
I remember a lot of people saying that he struggled during spring practices. And then I would see him a bunch of times at UF baseball games, just sitting up in the stands after football practice by himself.
So he's very lonely.
He's making a lot of friends.
He's just so lonely. He's very isolated. Just, he needs friends. So if anyone's out there looking to get in the friends business.
It is not great to be Jeff Driscoll, apparently.
Apparently. I can't believe that.
He's probably up there just clearing his head. And, you know. But and the thing with Brissett is that Charlie Weiss, Brissett wasn't really on Florida's radar until Muschamp took over, and then Charlie Weiss went after him hard. So
right, didn't Florida offer him a gray shirt beforehand? Wasn't that something that like Muschamp and Mice had to Muschamp and Weiss, not Mice. They had to overcome that.
Meyer apparently offered him a gray shirt early on, but yeah. He wasn't interested in that. And then when Muschamp and Weiss took over, you know, Weiss was going after him hard at his game, sitting next to his mom. His mom wasn't a big fan of Muschamp at all, but she loved Charlie Weiss.
So Driscoll was the nation's top-rated passer. Where did Brissett rank in the recruiting thing?
He was
Do you have a guesstimate?
Top five.
They got two good quarterbacks.
Yeah, they got two of the top five quarterbacks in the nation.
And what's interesting is I feel like those both would have been quarterbacks that would have fit really well in the old system.
Yeah.
And now it's like, I wonder how they're gonna work here. But I mean, I think going on what Tom's saying, I would obviously if we're gonna play this game, I'm gonna put Driscoll 3. And then Brissett 4, only because Driscoll's already got, whatever, a whole semester
yeah,
on campus on
Driscoll's
on Brissett.
Been here since, you know, the beginning of January.
Yeah,
Brissett
wasn't
getting here until
right.
May.
Yeah.
And Driscoll's got more pro-style tools, I would say, than Brissett.
We'll be
not
sure, I don't
sure
know.
About that.
But it's hard to determine at this point.
Yeah.
But big thing here, I guess we can take from this, is that Jeff Driscoll's very lonely looking for friends on campus. Tom loves Jeff Driscoll, so you guys need to hang out more. That's your boy. Was that not your favorite recruit? Was that not, if you had to rank your recruits, you were a little bit in love with him?
He was the most impressive person I saw play in high school.
Impressive player or most person? Just
player.
Just all-around person.
Player. Chang was there,
too. What an honor.
Chang was there, Ed was there, and we were all in awe of the performance that he put on.
Okay, what about your person rankings? If we're going to rank your favorite people.
Jabari Gorman, maybe?
Jabari Gorman.
He's
even
Jabari.
Yeah. Why Jabari?
Yeah.
Juwan Story was a neat person.
He's a neat guy.
That's good.
Listen to this, Juwan, you're a neat guy.
All right, back to Driscoll and Brissett. Two top five recruits. I don't think either one plans on being a career backup. What is the plan for whoever loses that competition? I don't think we know a lot from them or from Muschamp, but do we have any speculation on our parts?
If Brissett loses the competition, he's going to go play basketball.
Let's not spend too much time on this because we don't really know. But I guess conceivably Brissett could play basketball. Also, Brissett could play another position, or maybe Driscoll could play another. You never know. Like those guys are pretty fast, so like you could throw them in there and let them play like a wide receiver position or something like that.
I wouldn't be surprised at all to see Brissett on the basketball roster this season. Mm-hmm.
All right, well, I guess we'll just have to wait and see how that plays out. Moving through, we obviously got to talk to most of the players today. They brought out people from every position group. So let's move right into who they're going to be handing the ball to, whoever the quarterback is. I guess we'll talk about the backs. Anybody have anything on any of those guys from tonight?
Matt, you talked to running backs.
Yeah, I talked to Jeff Demps, and he actually told me a pretty interesting thing. There was a lot of rumors swirling and circulating the past month or so about him, you know, ditching the football team to pursue a professional track career. And I asked him if he had any seven-figure offers that were being reported, and he said no, he did not have any offers of those of that magnitude. I asked him if he did make the team.
Just six figures.
It was six
figures? No. I asked him if he did make the team to run in South Korea. He said he did make the team and chose not to attend. said he feels that he is a little bit behind from missing spring and missing workouts with the team and all that. And he says that once after fall practice gets underway, he feels like he should be able to catch up pretty soon.
Real quick, just for the listeners' sakes, it was the team in Korea. Can you kind of clarify what?
He was in Italy running with the U.S. national team, and it was with a camp, and there was 10 sprinters there, and they were going to cut that down to 6 to run with to World Championships in Daegu, South Korea, from August 27th to September 4th. And had he made that team, he would have, had to leave, miss fall, had a leg up on the Olympics, missed the first game, so it would have been a pretty big deal. But that's not the situation. He's going to be back for his senior year, and he did talk about, he knows that he's going to have a future in track, and he said he can't help but think about what he could do on the track at a lower weight, he's pursuing a full-time track career instead of, bulking up to maintain and go through a full football schedule. So he thinks about that, and it's obviously not going to play into this season, but it's something to look forward to for him in the future. Another thing with the backs is quarterback last year, Trey Burton, is going to be playing what Coach Muschamp's calling the F slot, which is kind of a fullback, kind of a
slot receiver.
He's going to be a slash guy, tight end. Right. Basically, Charlie Weiss is just going to have fun with him, I think.
Poor choice of words.
Poor choice of words. You can line him up as a fullback and then put him in motion, split him out wide, put him on a mismatch on a linebacker. It's going to be interesting to see how that works.
Muschamp said their use of him is limitless. So it'll be interesting to see how much they use.
Probably false. I think there probably is some sort of limit to him.
I want to talk more about how these guys all fit into the system, but before we move on to that, is there anything interesting about Chris Rainey or Mike Gillisley that we found out today?
Nothing on Mike Gillisley. Chris Rainey was being Chris Rainey. He said he's amped to be back in a pro style offense after having a pro style offense at Lakeland in high school. He said basically, people just need to watch the hell out because Florida's going to have a lot of weapons this year. I mean, Chris Rainey is being Chris Rainey in that regard. But
is it still good to be Chris Rainey?
I didn't ask him that, but
it probably is still good to be Chris Rainey, to clarify. One quick thing on Dempsey. He said he's at football weight now. The team has him listed at 188 pounds. Also, his jersey number has been switched to 28. Interesting.
Yeah, he said it seemed to fit more like a running back. Number 28 instead of 2.
Interesting. Marshall Faulk was 28, going to the Hall of Fame. Same as Rand. I'm going to say that one of the things that most interested me was looking at the jersey numbers that switched. I don't know if anyone agreed with that. Jelani Jenkins, the outside linebacker, now wearing number 3. He said that's what he wore in high school. Dominic Easley, a defensive tackle, is wearing number 2. Have we seen a defensive tackle wearing a number that low?
I don't think so.
Jay Howard's close, but...
Howard is number 6.
Yeah.
I was telling you guys this last night.
Your theory.
With Powell, Easley, and Floyd.
The listeners weren't at Flacco's Cuban Bakery with us. So please,
unfortunately. Sounds like it was a good time.
Have an open house for all the listeners some other time at Flacco's. But because they weren't there, please explain to them what you explained to us.
Well, last year, before the season started, those three big freshman recruits were all saying, they're the big three of... that Florida class, likening themselves to the Miami Heat and LeBron James, Chris Bosh, and Dwayne Wade. And now they've changed their numbers this year to 2, 4, and 7, which is one over Bosh, Wade, and LeBron's numbers of 1, 3, and 6.
Because you're going to do one better than them by winning the championship and not coming up short.
Anybody
ask them about that?
No, we did not. But I guess we can get into that if you want to talk about the way, not that listeners care that much, but the way that they had it set up at Media Day was they put like 6 defensive players all in a row together up on the podium, so you didn't get one-on-one time with really anyone. And if you guys followed the team last year, Dominic Easley, Sharif Floyd, and Ronald Powell, the aforementioned Big 3 defensive linemen, love the spotlight, like to kind of goof around and say funny things and outrageous things. So I wasn't really paying attention to them, but from what I've understood, there wasn't much substance there as far as, interesting information, just a lot of them being themselves and kind of being wild personalities.
You could hear him horsing around while Muschamp was still giving his introduction. It was funny.
Yeah,
they're children.
Yeah, they were mostly just having a good time up there, cracking jokes about whatever. There was a lot of talk about Chick-fil-A. I'm not really sure where that came from or why, but just a lot of
Chick-fil-A is delicious.
Yeah, I mean, true. Just a lot of
I missed that all summer.
Me too.
Don't have those
I feel the same
California.
Way. I gotta get back there. But just a lot of random things like that. That
did get to try In-N-Out though.
Okay, good to know. Thank you, Tom.
Things from the defensive line mostly had very little to do with football, and we're just talking about random things that nothing really of substance or any hard news. We tried to talk a little bit about how they've matured maybe from last year, especially a guy like Easley where there was the thing where him and Powell missed one of the spring practices, and then
it was one of the fall practices. One of the
practices,
in August.
My fault, yeah. But or that sort of thing, or like Easley when he apparently threatened to be leaving the team and transfer and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So he had already denied all that back in the spring, but they still said that they were a little more mature, but they didn't really get into how much they've developed or what they've learned. They all seem to be excited about the new system, though. Floyd is going to be playing defensive end and defensive tackle as they switch to kind of a hybrid 4-3-3-4. Powell's going to play a lot of linebacker, that sort of thing, but nothing really too substantial.
Actually, hold on. Let me say one thing, though. I did say earlier that the three of them love the attention, and that's kind of unfair to Sharif Floyd, because I feel like Sharif Floyd never really did anything wrong. He just seems to get grouped into them.
This is true. I was looking for it last night, because I felt like the three of them were said to have this sort of attitude or whatever, but I feel like it was mostly Powell
and Easley. Yeah, Sharif just showed up. He didn't skip. Like, that practice that they skipped, it was Easley and Powell that skipped. It wasn't Sharif. Sharif was there. Sharif got praise from the coaches. He played a lot. He actually did pretty well. And, yeah, I mean, I think that's my bad as much as anyone. I think
he just gets lumped in with those three,
I think. And I think everyone would like to do that because it's easy to do that because they're all three really big-name recruits, and that's my bad as much as anyone.
Well, there was one quote I saw reading through stuff last night where he was like, we're the greatest, we're going to be so great, and it's going to be awesome. But, like, I don't think he's perfect, but I definitely don't think he's as bad as those two.
He comes off as the more mature of the three, for sure.
Yeah, but that's not that different.
Regardless of whether he has a likeness to Beast from X-Men or not.
He does kind of look like Beast from X-Men. He also wears glasses, which might be
right,
the reason why
right,
we think he's more mature. I mean, the defensive line, I mean, you got those three are kind of, there's no upperclassmen that you're looking at and saying that these are going to be the guys. Last year, there were no upperclassmen that they were looking at and saying these are going to be the guys. It's the same case. Last year, they tried to force, you know, Tradau and Duke Lemons as like, veteran leaders, but they weren't very good. They had never really been that good. So it's kind of open season right now, and they need the three of those guys to step up, although obviously Ronald Powell will be playing two positions in one, and that he plays that hybrid defensive end linebacker position.
I think we can't forget about Jay Howard either. I think he's going to play an integral role in that line.
I think the defensive tackle position, I think, is pretty good between Easley, Floyd, Howard, and then Hunter.
Right,
and
right.
I
that's
think
a
there's
position
one of
strength.
Them I'm forgetting. I think they're strong there, but defensive end definitely is something to worry about. William Green is projected to be a starter, I think, and he hasn't done a whole lot in his Florida career, to say the least. So
Muschamp said he was going to play a little outside linebacker as well.
Yeah, they have a lot of those guys, because I guess everybody who's going to play D-end has to have stand-up potential if they're going to switch between the 3-4 and the 4-3.
Yeah, so, I think, you got Powell, Green, and Laurentian McCray.
I think the three of them are good fits to play the hybrid kind of position.
Why do you think Green is?
Didn't he play some linebacker in high school?
I don't know.
That's how I came to understand it.
I don't look at William Green and think there's a lot
played,
that I'm pumped about.
He was a surprise.
I'll look it up right
days.
Now, but I'm pretty sure he played some linebacker in high school.
William Green always looks like he's about to fall asleep. Also, which doesn't help. He's got those lazy eyes. He doesn't have lazy eyes. He has sleepy eyes. Let me clarify.
He's a very depressing Twitter too, which is something to look into if you're.
He's kind of a depressing personality, to be honest. He's kind of a killjoy.
Maybe
in my opinion,
Jeff should be friends then.
So
no, that's two sad people in one group. I can't have that.
I saw you talking to Andre DeBose a lot today. What did you have to say, Tyler?
Andre was pretty interesting. He, in the spring, I think the most, like, obviously it wasn't, like, the most important thing that came out during the spring, but it was, to me, the most interesting was how the receivers talked about Coach Zach Azzani, the old wide receivers coach who left, who they call Coach Z. And one guy said that he was anal. Other guys said that he was basically way too uptight, like, that your feet had to be perfect. You had to be, if it was like you had to line up 8 yards away from the ball, you had to be exactly 8 yards. If you were 7 yards, if you were 9 yards, he would get on you. And like he said that he was so uptight that like people couldn't relax. And Andre kind of talked about that. And I asked, basically Andre said he had no problem learning the playbook, but all season, Urban and Zach Azzani kept saying, you know, that he can't learn the playbook. And I asked the Bows, like, why were they saying that if it wasn't, if you're saying you knew the playbook? And he said, with Zach Kasani, you missed one assignment that week in practice. That was it for you. You were nobody again. And, like, I kind of asked, did you feel like you like, how did you feel like the season went overall? Because I don't know exactly what his numbers were, but they're not impressive, especially for a guy who came in as the biggest recruit in his class, and a guy that Urban pinpointed as being a game changer.
Right, he had two touchdowns in the return game, but
right,
pretty
as
much
a kick returner,
passing,
as a kick returner,
right,
he was very
right.
explosive and he did a lot. But as a receiver, he didn't do very much. And I asked him, "How did you feel like you were doing at receiver?" He said, "I felt like I was fine. I just didn't get my chance." So he was very adamant about the fact that Coach Z was a bigger problem than Andre DeBose was, according to Andre DeBose.
I asked him kind of the same line of questioning, and he seemed to get pretty defensive in that regard as to how he performed last year and his goals looking forward to this year. But, I mean, the wide receiver position, it's kind of like the rest of the positions on the field. There's a lot of unknowns. You don't know who's going to step up. A lot of people talked about Quentin Dunbar in the spring, but he hasn't proved anything either yet, you know,
right,
in real games.
Were,
so.
Yeah, everyone's been really high on him. One thing I did ask Omarius Hines and Frankie Hammond also was, when they've been here, when Percy was here, they've been here when Riley Cooper was here, and those guys during those years were kind of the go-to receiver. And I asked them, do you need the number one guy, the guy that, like, on third and seven, he's the guy that you're going to look to, or whatever. Do you need a primary receiver? And they said, yes, we got to have that guy, and we didn't have it last year, is essentially what they're saying. Deontay Thompson, they kind of, like, he's kind of the guy. Another receiver who I've talked to outside of Media Days kind of said, I don't know why, like, Deontay is the guy, he's had his chances, and he's not really done anything with it. So I think there's a situation where they're going into camp, and they're saying, we think Deontay is kind of solid as a receiver, but no one else is, and we got to have someone step up. And I think Frankie Hammond said this is going to be the most competitive camp they've had since he's been here, because there's no one that you come into the year knowing. Last year it was Deontay and Carl Moore, and this year it's sort of like, we'll find out.
Yeah, nobody's entrenched as a starter. There's nothing guaranteed to anybody in that
yeah.
position, I think.
One guy I want to... Did you guys get to talk to Stephen Ali at all? Do we know anything
he
about
He wasn't
him?
There, so no.
Because he's a guy that interests me just from a physical tool standpoint, but we're going to have to wait till later to see if there's anything good with him, I guess.
Interesting. Elaborate.
Well, no, because he's just... I thought he has, like, 4.4 speed. Isn't he, like, 6.5?
Well, 40 times, don't believe that. But, no, I mean, just because, like, they'll always say people have outrageous 40 times thinking of the combine. It's like... But
true.
Ahmad Black
true.
Supposedly was running, like, a 4.5 at Florida. Then he goes out
right.
to NFL Combine and runs, like, a 4.8, basically. So I don't know about that. But,
well,
yeah, I mean, he's a big-bodied receiver.
Right.
And you
it's a
think,
team
like,
with a lot
matchups.
Of short receivers built for the spread, and I feel like if you're going to play a pro style, it would be nice to have that bigger guy. So I was just wondering if we knew anything about his progress. Or
yeah, I don't really know. I mean, as a freak athlete, I think that he's as good as they come, but I just don't think he's ready
right.
yet. He didn't play, obviously, very competitive. He played football. Like, a lot of things when he came here, the big thing was he never played football before. He was in Canada, and that was a very ignorant way to look at it. He had played football since his freshman year of high school, which is about as much experience as a lot of guys on that team. Not everyone's played their whole lives. A lot of guys picked it up in high school. And I think the only difference is that there just wasn't that competitive ball. The first time you ever touched the ball was on a reverse, and you went 70 yards or something like that for a touchdown without even being touched. Like, it was like the game isn't even like the same type of game
right.
in Canada. And I think that's the issue, is he just hasn't been used to like being in this competitive environment.
Yeah, all these guys have to continue to grow as players, obviously. And I mean, Weiss's, from what I understand, Weiss's playbook and his system is supposed to be like notoriously difficult to master. So if a guy like DeBose was having troubles last year, I'll believe that he's got this one under control when I actually see him on the field for a change. So.
That's definitely fair. I would expect.
But do you think it's that? I'm sorry, I don't mean to cut you off. But do you think it's that difficult for the receivers? I've heard that Weiss is good at simplifying things and getting two or three routes that these receivers are a position can excel at and putting that in there for them repeatedly so they have a chance to succeed instead of trying to make them learn an entire system like that.
I don't know. I don't believe it's difficult to like run the routes, but I always thought there was some kind of confusing terminology that they would have to master before they were on. I mean, I don't pretend to know what the hell's going on.
I don't. I mean, I feel like last year, I mean, they still did those option routes last year. I mean, it's going to be the same kind of thing. I mean, it's going to be different, but it's still, I mean, it wasn't easy last year either. I don't
right.
think it's like this, like that offense was super simple and this one's going to be super difficult. I think it'll be about the same level. The one thing is you obviously got those option routes, and it's like, that's one thing you have to learn in college is that depending on what the Demons is running, you have to run a certain route. You know what I mean? Like when we play Madden, it's
yeah.
kind of like we have set routes. We know what our receivers are doing every time, but it's not like that in real life. If the defense is running a cover two, you got to decide within like a second that you're going to be running a post maybe, and if they're running like a cover three, or let's say they're running a man defense, maybe you're running a fly. You got to be able to adjust real quick.
Okay.
And I think that's the biggest challenge, I think, for some of these young receivers. I guess real quick, preseason prediction, top three pass catchers on the team.
Whew.
For me, I think it's got to be probably Thompson. I'll go with Dunbar.
Okay.
I don't want to buy into the hype because I haven't seen him play, but it's just almost if they're going to say something about somebody, then I have nothing else to go on. So I have to believe all the hype about him. And if they're going to be playing a lot of I form, maybe a guy like Jordan Reed is in the top three at tight end like that.
Okay.
I mean, I think Dunbar is one for me that's going to be there. And then I feel like Thompson's entrenched, but, you know, why not? Why not somebody else? And I feel like, again, like last year, there's going to be one of the backs, somebody from the backfield, somebody that's not a receiver is going to be in that top three, coming out of the backfield, catching a lot of passes and doing something different. So, I mean, Dennis Rainey, one of those two.
Okay, interesting. Tom?
I'll go with Dunbar, Thompson, and Trey Burton.
Okay. I'm going to go in no particular order, but I think Frankie Hammond, I think Jordan Reed, and I am going to go with, I guess, Dunbar. Honestly, you can't tell me that Deontay Thompson is a good pass catcher. Like, no one can,
yeah.
Everyone, they'll always tell me that. Everybody on the Florida football team is going to say that, but you can't tell me he's a good pass catcher. There's no, I've watched too many games of him, the ball bouncing off his hands.
There wouldn't have been a story before last year that he was changing his catching method if he was a good pass catcher.
Yeah, he's not a good pass catcher. And I just think at some point, it's like you've had your chances. You've been essentially, they leaned on you 2 years ago. They wanted Deontay to be a good vertical option. He never really emerged. Last year, they wanted him to be a good vertical option, and he never really emerged. It's like in college football, you only get 4 years of playing time. If you've had 2 years and nothing's really come of it, that's the equivalent of an NFL career where you've had 6 years and nothing's come of it. There's
right.
No reason to think it's going to turn around now.
If he doesn't show something early, I don't think the coaching staff is going to hold their breath and, you know, keep him in the lineup waiting for it to come around.
Yeah.
Who do you think becomes their top vertical option then?
Quentin. Quentin Dunbar, I think. That was the big thing with him. Is he is a good, fast receiver. He's short, but he's fast.
Yeah.
All right, well, we've covered quarterbacks, we've covered running backs, we've covered receivers. Talk for a minute about the offensive line. There's not a ton of stuff there, and it's obviously not that interesting, but Xavier Nixon's bulked up a little bit. He projects to be the starter at left tackle. Then Matt Patchen's back. He's had a million injuries in his career, but he's healthy right now, and he projects to start at right tackle. The interior, we got Jalapio, looks like one of the guards. Silberman looks like another. And then center's a little bit unsure. You got Sam Roby, maybe. You got Jonathan Harrison, who moved to center in the spring. And then you have Dan Wenger, who transferred in from Notre Dame, fresh face for the team. He started in 2008 there, did not start in 2009, had some issues with concussions, and then was granted a sixth year of eligibility, transferred here, and so he's got a shot at the job, but I guess we'll have to see what unfolds there. Does anybody have anything to add on that?
Was Silberman there?
Silverman was there. I didn't talk to him.
Okay, I wonder how big he is now, because he kind of came in 250 pounds. It was looked at like he could be a super athletic left tackle, which is like what you want out of like a good pass protector, a guy with good footwork. He was a competitive high school basketball player, and then they moved him to guard during the spring, and that really, really surprised me, because it's like you're going to be a much bigger guy when you're in the guard.
He looked pretty big today. I mean, I didn't see him before, but he looked pretty big today. What I was interested about was, did you talk to those guys on the line about Winger coming in from Notre Dame, Greg? Because when I was at Media Days in Hoover, that's what a lot of people were talking about, was that Winger was instrumental in helping, especially the O-line, adapt to Charlie Weiss's system.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He played under Weiss for, I think, 4 years he was there with at the same time as Weiss, so he has a lot of experience working with him. He also had a year under offensive line coach Perducci, so he knows the system, and they did say he's been very helpful for a lot of the guys. Some of them admitted that, well, it really isn't a ton different from what they were doing. If they're gonna be in the I form more, they're gonna be doing a lot more downhill run blocking. But it's not a ton different. But the things that are different, he has helped them grasp that immensely, and they're very grateful to have him around.
Silberman, by the way, Ian Silberman has bulked up to 300 pounds. So he's apparently gained 50 pounds in the last Wow. Since he was in high school. So that's a considerable gain from him.
Hunger.
Yeah, I think a big thing would be Matt Patchen, if he is healthy. Urban loved Matt Patchen. Of course, it's always popular when it's a guy who's not actually playing. You can talk about, like, oh, if we had him, we'd be, you know,
right,
rolling.
Right.
So, I don't know. But, like, they talked about him being really intense and him being good. Obviously, he's had ACL tears. He had a wrist injury last year that kept him out for the whole season.
Didn't he end up going to Dr. James Andrews to get his last surgery?
I'm not sure. I know, like Tyler said, he had both ACLs. I think he had a shoulder. He had the wrist last year. That was the big thing. Took 3 separate surgeries to finally be where we are now. So, I mean, everybody's pulling for him. If something else happens to him, which, you know, obviously it seems like it, very likely it could, then I think they would be relying on Chaz Green, who is a freshman still.
Oh, well, good thing you are covering the team.
Yeah, good thing I'm really sure what's going on.
Chaz Green is a redshirt freshman from Tampa Catholic High School in Tampa, Florida. So
it seems like everybody's pleased with his potential. So if they have to replace Patchen, he would likely be that guy.
Yeah. I think that's one of the biggest stories of the whole offense, as everything, is just how much depth are they going to have at offensive line. What are they? I mean, they had like 8 guys healthy in the spring.
I think
they
it was
had
like 6 by the time the game actually came.
No, I think
around.
It was 8 because there was 3 guys going both ways, and it was like exhausting. That was one of the things Muschamp pointed to when he talked about Brantley, and he's like, Brantley was on the run the whole time. That's not going to work. And so if you have Brantley as your starting quarterback and you have little depth in your offensive line, you're in trouble because you've got to have a good pocket for him. He's not a guy who's going to make plays with his legs. So that could be a huge domino effect if the offensive line is to come through.
Right. Definitely. If you think about last year, he was under pressure a ton, and that was with Pouncey at center, first round draft pick, then they had Gilbert at left tackle, he's second-round draft pick.
It was
so.
A veteran offensive line. That should have been the strength of the team. Although,
right.
You can't point to that and be like, well, he didn't do good then, so he's not going to do now. Or he's not going to do good now, because offensive line kind of underperformed last year.
It's just concerning because
of Pouncey wanted a good position on that one.
I guess. It's just concerning because if that unit struggled and those guys, a lot of these same guys were on the team then, but those were still the best players, it's a little bit of an indictment on these guys who are now replacing them, because they should, I mean, reason to believe they should be worse than that unit that already struggled, if you know where I'm going with that.
Maybe, or there's a counter. I kind of think it's a thing where it's like maybe those guys weren't that good in the first place. Maybe they're a little bit overrated. And now these guys come in, and perhaps they're better. Like, it's just because those guys were hyped and didn't do well doesn't mean that the guys below them weren't as good necessarily.
Well, I just mean a lot of the same guys that didn't play last year were still here, are the guys that are playing this year.
Yeah.
So if somebody decided that the guys who started last year are better than this year's team, then I mean...
I think I'm going to change my mind. I agree with you. That's a good point. I'll change my mind when
future
I have
politics
to.
For Tyler Jett.
I'm just saying. When I realize I made a bad point. I'm sorry, listeners. That was a stupid point on my part. Greg made a better point. You win. High five.
Listen, but it is college football, so Tyler could be right. These guys could develop over an offseason, and so much change can happen at this point in their careers.
What about the secondary? That's a position that's been ravaged by departures and arrests. Janoris Jenkins. Janoris Jenkins kicked off the team, obviously. Ahmad Black left, graduated, now playing for the Tampa Bay Bucks. But then incoming freshman, you've got Deontay Pop Saunders, who just reported popped for weed in May, and Matt Elam arrested for another open container violation in June. So what's going to be the situation in the secondary? It doesn't seem like there's one starter that you can name besides maybe Matt Elam.
I think the other safety position is probably going to be Evans, right?
Josh Evans?
Yeah, the safeties are pretty much set. But I agree at cornerback where
you're going to have Moses on one side,
right,
and then probably Josh Shaw on the other.
Jeremy Brown?
I mean, there's a lot of candidates. I was like Cody Riggs.
Jeremy Brown wasn't even there today.
Yeah, I guess Jeremy Brown wasn't available. But, yeah, I mean, that was the thing last year, was sort of looking for that number two guy. Obviously, losing Janoris is huge just because they came into it and we're like, all right, we know we have one good cornerback and the other one's going to be kind of up in the air. We're going to figure it out. Now it's both are kind of up in the air, in my opinion.
Do we agree that Janoris was like the best player on the team projected for this season?
Without a doubt.
So that's a huge loss. And I think now that's probably their single weakest position, because I thought all the guys they platooned opposite Janoris last year were pretty bad. Now it's going to be two of those guys going against Alshon Jeffrey. And
the only thing that position does have going for it is depth. I think there's more potential players there than there are at other positions.
I mean, there's more bodies, but right. I don't know if there's more players.
I think what they're going to do is just throw it against the wall and see what sticks, to use one of Muschamp's mantras.
Like Muschamp was saying today, they don't have a lot of experience in that secondary right now, but they have a lot of athleticism, which he said he'd rather have than experience.
How many freshmen do they bring in?
5 on scholarship, and I believe there's a walk-on.
Ooh, there we go. And a walk-on.
Of those freshmen, though, every single one of the DBs that I talked to was praising Marcus Roberson.
Yeah, he was a big get, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was a surprise in that class. First, he was committed to Texas Tech, then he decommitted, like, a week later, then committed to Auburn, then decommitted, then signing day signed his letter in Temple, Florida.
Yeah, Marcus Roberson, I don't know how he is as a person, but he has a good case study on why covering recruiting sucks,
oh, yeah.
for sure.
I want to talk a little bit about Matt Elam. He's a guy that's very interesting to me. Obviously, he's expected to step in and replace Ahmad Black, who was the leader of the team last year. And now Elam's a guy who's had troubles with the alcohol arrests, things like that. He's got an interesting story, and he's still expected to kind of step up and be a leader. I don't know. What do you guys think about him? Did anybody talk to him today?
I talked to him. He said this year he's just a lot more confident than he was last year. And that whole freshman class as a group, he said they were very close and just didn't mesh well with the rest of the team. But now, as a group, they're all just a lot, they're like family. And he said that's helped him a lot with how he thinks he'll be performing on the field. Said the coaching staff, too, has more confidence in them. And he was just preaching confidence all day. And if you're not confident, you're not going to play well. But if you're confident, you know, you could have a bigger impact.
Maybe. Right, it's kind of the thing Muschamp talked about a little bit. I think everybody's confident on media day. We'll see when the games actually happen and in 2 weeks what they're doing. But I don't think anybody will ever admit to being not confident.
So. Yeah, there's certainly a decent amount of swagger going on. Actually, this is a side note: John Bostic did admit that he had some self doubt in him before the season started last year, which I think is interesting.
I'm glad to move over to that. Linebacker is the only position we haven't discussed yet. Anybody talk to them today?
I talked to the linebackers. Talked to Jelani and John. Bostic, John Jenkins, the other one, and they started pretty much all the games last year, second year on the team, and it was kind of like trial by fire. I think they weren't at all, honestly, I don't think they were really prepared to be those guys, and I think going into this year, they also kind of talked about they have confidence this year, big thing, that's what everyone's talking about, and they kind of talked about last year going into it. At least John Bostic admitted that he said, I mean, you just don't know if you're college football caliber player until you go out there. He had some doubt about whether he was going to be good enough, and I think he said as the season went on, he got more and more comfortable, and he felt like he belonged there. But there were some games where they got smashed in the mouth. Mississippi State threw the ball like 3 times in the second half. They just went right after him, right up the gut, and I think our linebackers got whooped, and that's a big reason they lost the game. South Carolina just got pounded by Marcus Lattimore. LSU just got pounded. And I think that's one of those things, those linebackers got to step up and, you know, fill the gaps harder and be more physical players. And I think that's going to be a huge key for the defense. I mean, there's a lot of keys. There's a lot of question marks. And I think from the linebacker position, it's just what kind of leaders can Bostic and Jenkins be? And John and Jelani both said they felt like they're going into this year and they know that they have to be the leaders. They know that they're the guys at their position. Whereas last year, they seem to do a lot more rotating, where each guy would be a specialist almost. Like, if they were going to blitz, they'd bring in certain linebackers and have a blitz package. If they were going to be more coverage, there'd be certain guys that'd be in the coverage package. If it was just a 2nd and 10, they might have their base package, but it wasn't necessarily the same personnel. And he said it kind of fragmented the linebackers, and nobody stepped up as the leader because nobody was out there all the time. Now, under Muschamp, he's having all the linebackers do everything. So when they're blitzing, they want Bostic and Jelani Jenkins blitzing. When they're in coverage, they want those guys in coverage. And it's sort of like you got those two guys, and they're the leaders, and then there's going to be a third mystery spot. Someone's got to fill that. No one really knows yet. That's going to be the whole point of training camps, to figure out who that's going to be. But it is very interesting to see that they think that there wasn't a leader last year because of the style of defense that they ran.
Is there a clear-cut favorite for the mic, and do you think that whoever is the mic is going to make the calls for the linebackers, or do you think Powell's going to take over that leadership role?
Yeah, I don't. I guess Bostic would be. I think Bostic will be the guy making the calls, in my opinion. I don't think Powell's a great athlete, but I think that Bostic and Jenkins have been around longer, and I think they're probably more intelligent. They're both pretty smart guys, and so I think that they're going to lean on them to be making the calls.
Now, where do you think Jelani fits in the new system? I know, like, in the 4-3, he can play weak side, but if they do, like, a 3-4 kind of thing, is he going to be one of the pass rushers, or is he another inside guy? Did he say anything about that?
I didn't talk to him about that. He's definitely an outside guy, for sure, like a pass rusher. He'd be on the edge, because he's not big. He's
right.
Fast.
I just checked out. He's only 230 right now, which is kind of small for a 3-4 backer.
Yeah. He won't be an inside guy.
One thing, getting back to the DBs for a second, you're talking about the leadership. It was funny because I was talking to Moses Jenkins, like, obviously losing leaders like Ahmad Black and Janoris Jenkins just with his play on the field, and saying how big of a leader he was, how they're going to replace that. Well, I found it interesting. Moses was saying, oh, we're all going to step up and become leaders. Then I was going over to talk to Matt Elam, and he was like, I feel like, you know, it's my time to step up as a leader. Well, Moses was saying, you know, the whole secondary, you know, stepping up. Matt Elam was, you know, my time to step up.
Didn't you say there was some derision in that area after Janoris?
That was the most interesting thing. I was talking to Josh Shaw about, you know, how it affected the team when, you know, they thought Janoris was coming back after he didn't decide to enter the draft. Thought they were going to have him for a senior season. And then, you know, the whole arrests come out. Goes away from the team, transfers to North Alabama, was it?
Yes.
Yeah. And Josh Shaw was like, after his arrest, you know, it kind of created a division within the team, you know, because Muschamp wanted to do things the Florida way, and he was saying, you know, got rid of a couple guys that weren't doing it the Florida way, and now they're closer as a team because of it.
So basically guys who didn't really buy into Muschamp's system didn't really care that much for Will Muschamp, like, it makes sense that Janoris is sort of there to sort of like be like, all right, I got have a whole season where I'm healthy, and I'll boost my draft stock, and that's the only purpose of me being here. So that's probably one of the factors that led him transferring, possibly.
I think Janoris doesn't really fit the mold that's being applied to him. A lot of people that I've talked to have said Janoris is a good kid. He just made some really, really dumb mistakes. And Muschamp's, Muschamp's was handcuffed there. I mean, what can you do? After, you know, your star player gets arrested for the third time and the second time within a matter of weeks. And you've came in professing that you're going to, you know, make your players follow the Florida way. You've got to do something. You've got to make an example out of Janoris, I think. I think that was the situation.
For sure. Also, to understand if you're smoking pot, what you're doing out of the house. Because, I mean, all the pot smokers I know are pretty lazy people. I don't know what they're doing leaving the house to smoke weed. If you're smoking weed, you're in the house.
There's a new way to get caught.
There's TV shows to be watched. There's a lot of cartoons on.
Video games to be played.
You know, you're a football player. You can probably call a girl over to come to your house. You have that kind of pull. You don't have to go out to meet girls. They can come to you. You got to learn to use the system properly if you're a football player. Just smoke weed at your house, man.
Yeah, you got to be really stupid, you know, get caught in a car downtown with someone else. I mean, it's not that hard to, you know, stay in your dorm, stay in your apartment, wherever. You know, no one's going to know.
I don't know. I feel like I could see a lot of people getting caught, like anybody. Like the Matty Elam thing to me is so silly, because it was probably a solo cup with Hennessy.
It was a plastic, like, water bottle, but essentially the same thing.
Was he out on the street, or what exactly? Where was he?
He was in the 100 block. It's, like, basically right there behind where Flacco's is.
Yeah, Flacco's Cuban Bakery that's sponsoring this podcast.
So in between, you know, the nightclubs in the downtown area, he was walking, and officers saw him, and he immediately tossed it down, and they picked it up and somehow determined that it contained Hennessy and Coke. But at least he's, you know, stepped up his alcohol ways, got a little class, because last year was a Four Loko, I believe.
It's no good. It's a bad look.
Yeah.
Oh, one other thing I do want to jump on real quick, just special teams real quick, is Caleb Sturgis. I asked him, Will Muschamp gave him a shout-out today because he's actually graduating. Look up what year Caleb Sturgis is technically, but anyway, he's a redshirt junior, so he is going into his fourth year, and apparently he's already got his undergrad degree. He's going to grad school, which is cool that you're graduating in 3 years or whatever it may be. I'm sure he was here for the summers too, but I asked him, you know, how many years of eligibility do you have left? Because I actually was a little fuzzy on that. I didn't have the roster on me right then. I just kind of blanked. He told me 2 years, but I'm going to stay for as long as they want me. Or like, I'm like, well, I think I said, are you going to be going to grad school or what, for 2 more years, whatever? And he goes, I don't know. It just depends on if they want me or I don't really know if I'm going to be here for 2 years, which is very odd to me to be a kicker with 2 years of eligibility left saying, I don't know if I'm going to be here for 2 years. And so I kind of talked to him, and I was like, well, what do you mean by that? He's like, well, I don't want to be around if they don't need me. And I was like, well, what does that mean? And then he mentioned the fact, I don't know, it's like, you know, after what I went through with my back last year. But then he stopped himself mid-sentence, basically. And for those that don't know, if he didn't follow the team last year, he was out pretty much the whole season with a back injury, a hernia kind of a thing.
Wasn't it technically a broken back?
Maybe there's something broken. It was a bad injury, yeah. Back-related, and he missed pretty much the whole year. And so it's very interesting to me that, I mean, he might not, maybe he won't stick around for 2 years. I don't know. Like maybe he might be looking to leave and trying to go pro or whatever, although I can't imagine there's much of a rush. Maybe he just will give up football together because I don't know. I can't imagine there's much of a rush from any kicker to leave early because it's hard enough to break into that job.
Right. There's not many kickers being drafted in the NFL.
So, I don't know. It'd be interesting to see. But I think that's, anybody else got anything else they want to jump on as far as media today?
Yeah, I think we've about, I mean, we went position by position. I think we've about covered. All right, so we're going to wrap up the show with some Gator guarantees. I'll just get right into it. I'll start. My Gator guarantee for this season is that Matt Patchen will stay healthy and play the whole year and actually do well.
Wow.
Now, it's easy to see where he's been injured every season that he could get another one, but it hasn't been like it's a recurring injury. It's something different every year. So nobody is that unlucky to have four separate injuries in four separate seasons. I just right. don't buy it.
Yeah, but now he's got everything's wrong with that. But, no, I mean, I think that's
I mean,
that's
supposedly
cute.
He's like 100%.
That's cute. No, it's
he's
cute.
Play at least.
Yeah. I hope. We're wishing you well, Matt Patchen.
Right.
My Gator guarantee is going to be that Andre DeBose will be starting by the end of the year. He'll be one of the starting receivers. He's too damn electric to keep him off the field. Football is all about finding your playmakers and getting the ball to the playmakers. So that's what I'm going with.
All right. Sounds good to me, Tom.
All right, my Gator guarantee is that Marcus Roberson will have the biggest impact of any of the freshman class.
Any? Even your boy Driscoll?
Yeah.
Jabari Gorman.
Now, when you say biggest impact, he starts at some point?
I don't know about starts, but he'll see a lot of playing time. He'll see the field. He'll make plays. All the DBs I talked to, you know, obviously they had five freshman DBs come in. They all said Marcus Roberson, above all of them, has been the most impressive so far.
Yeah, well, if he's got everybody else's support, then why not, you know?
Why not Tom Green's, too?
All right, Matt Watts?
Yeah, my Gator guarantee is after a year marred by off-the-field issues and not too much success on the field, I'm just going to say in 2011, it's going to be great to be Chris Rainey again, and he will lead all Florida backs in rushes and rushing yards and touchdowns this year.
I thought we already agreed that it's always good to be Chris Rainey, though.
Well, you know, maybe not 2010.
It's going to be extra good.
It's going to be better.
Do we have a yardage guess? Is there the first 1,000-yard rush?
I'm not going to go that far. But
what are you going to? How far are you willing to go, Matt? You tell me. How far do you want to go?
He's going to have 700, 700, 800, something like that.
That's not a bad season for Chris Rainey.
Yeah. Plus his receiving.
Yeah, getting that passing game. Get out in space.
Yeah.
All right, well, I guess you guys are
going to... 1,000 total
yards? Yeah, so over 1,000 from scrimmage, yes.
Okay. Well, I guess you guys are going to have to keep those in mind for a while. It's going to be probably, like, what, 6-8 months before anybody can cash in on these?
We got 1 month before the season even starts, but take that to the bank. We'll play this back at the end of the year when we're all correct, except for Tom.
Yeah, of course. Otherwise, we'll just forget about it.
All
right. Well, that about wraps up our show for this week. Send any feedback to podcast@alligator.org. Until then, thanks for listening.
Yeah, don't forget to subscribe on iTunes, follow us on Twitter, and get on that Facebook fan page, too.
Should we all plug our Twitters?
I mean, if you guys want to do that, go right ahead. I'm not on Twitter yet.
Yeah, Greg's on Twitter, but he doesn't use it. All right, real quick, Tyler Jett, it's actually T-Y-L-E-R, double underscore, so two underscores.
He fancy.
That's right, two underscores, Jett. Because Tyler, regular underscore Jet, has already been taken by some clown. So
everybody's going to follow that guy. You know
I
that.
Know. Well,
I'm about to go on that tip, too, because I'm Watt Matz instead of Matt Watts, because obviously that generic name is taken on Twitter as well.
It's Watt Matz?
Watt Matz, W-A-T-T-M-A-T-T-S.
Okay, so both your first and last name are spelled incorrectly on your
Correct.
Like okay. His are spelled incorrectly. Mine are spelled in Spanish. It's Tomas underscore Verde, T-O-M-A-S underscore V-E-R-D-E. Hop on that train.
All right. Thanks for listening.